All right, I see the broadcast is live sign. Welcome to Matt Gaines Live. Happy Freight Friday. What are you drinking today? I have Corona, and I did do a little bit of lime. And I'm hoping that you can still hear me because I can't really hear myself anymore. Zeke, can you hear me okay? Everybody can hear me? Good. All right, welcome to Matt Gaines Live. Sorry to mess around. Just drinking maybe too much beer right now. We're going to talk about hours of service regulations. I have many guests because I want to get a holistic opinion on this topic. I want to talk to everybody about how we can improve the hours of service regulations because they touch everyone's area of business, truckers, shippers, and logistics companies alike. Today's show is sponsored by two of my favorite companies, Lean. Oh, darn it. I already messing up the show. Swanley, my favorite TMS. And the reason why I like it so much is because it's very flexible. So some of you who are using the much larger or older companies, you know the frustration with your TMS because you really want them to add different features or you need them to integrate with a shipper or a customer. And they can't, or it costs a fortune. So SwanLeap is very different. I love the flexibility. I love the analytics, and they're there, and they're unique, and they're new. The best part is in the link in this post, you will have, click on the link at some point in time, and you'll see you get 6 months free using the TMS. 6 months, people. So use it, and it's really 6 months free on TMS. It's beautiful. So click on that, and thank you for being part of Mad Dropless. The other company is our favorite factoring company, OTR Capital, based out of Atlanta. You guys all know Kevin Nolan and Grace Murr. They've all been on the show. Reason why I love OTR Capital for factoring is because I love that they don't hide fees. They don't play around with data. They help you out as a carrier, as a broker, maybe even as a shipper with back office work. They treat you like your family. So thank you, OTR, and they should be in the comments. So say hi, OTR people. All right, so let's get started. And I want to get started with one thing before I introduce our guests. I saw this article today. Justin Shepherd is in the house, one of my favorite people. Jason's here. Ron Kane's here. Let me pull up my article because I want to tell you guys. I posted this on LinkedIn, and it's very interesting. I want to actually start off with my guests and talk about it. So I saw it the other night. And it's driver faces charges after a crash that killed a detention officer. So this commercial truck driver is now facing charges of manslaughter and aggravated assault. And it's for an accident where he rear-ended multiple vehicles, killing someone. He said that he looked down, he looked back up, and he crashed into vehicles. Joe Popolardo, who's about to join us, and I have, as attorneys, we've seen these accidents a lot. Interesting thing is that he had, let me make sure I get this right. When he asked about the crash, he had talked about how he, in his electronic logbook, he entered that he was in his sleeper berth. However, during that time, it looks like he went from one spot in Arizona to the north of Nogales, which is kind of hard to do when you're supposed to be in your sleeper berth. The other piece that they said in this article was that he would use a coin to alter his ELD, which is interesting. I'm so stupid. I didn't even think these devices could be altered. I should have guessed they could have been. So I think that this is a good starting point to talk about ELDs, talk about hours of service, these accidents. So let's bring on our guests and we can start with introductions and then we can dive into this example. So let's start with my favorite person in the whole world is my favorite attorney based out of Cleveland, Ohio, Joe Popolardo. Hi, Joe.
Hello.
I'm glad to have you with us. Thank you very, very much. Joe, could you give us a quick introduction? And also, is it snowing in Cleveland?
It's not snowing, but there's plenty of snow left over from Tuesday and Wednesday.
Would you get like 2 feet?
Well, some places did. We're all over the place, depending whether you live east or west. The whole city's divided that way. Anyways, I'm the old lawyer, 40 years at it, and I do almost only trucking defense, always for the motor carrier and drivers. And what can I say? I've tried a lot of cases and lost some and won some, and what are you going to do? It's a fun life, and working with truckers is great. and working with trucking companies is great too, sometimes.
And I'll tell you guys that I've known Joe for many years. We've worked together for a long time. And every time I see him, he has this little book of regulations in his pocket or somewhere nearby. He has the thing memorized. So I don't know why you carry it around. There it is. There it is. And but you haven't memorized, so I don't know why you carry it around in your pocket. I think you pull it out sometimes when you're being challenged about regulations from young whippersnappers, mm-hmm. and you like to point to it and give it to us to read. But thank you for joining us. Joe's going to walk through soon some of the liability pieces. He's going to talk about the new changes to our service regulations and a couple of the things I want Joe to talk about. Adam, my co-host for this show, just in case I freeze up and my internet crashes, which is known to do. Adam, could you introduce ourselves to those very few people who do not know you?
Adam Wingfield, Innovative Logistics Group, LLC, right here out of Charlotte, North Carolina. We are profitability, compliance, and carrier services experts. I've been in the trucking industry for 20 years myself. I have had the opportunity to assist small carriers and large carriers in ensuring that they make the right decisions from a profitability standpoint, and also providing support on a carrier services side as well as compliance. Super passionate about the industry, super passionate about success in the industry, knowing that the success within the industry is on the wrong side right now. So over the next couple of years, we are seriously looking to make a big, big change and a big impact to that. So super excited to be on the panel and talk about this, because this is one of the things that, honestly, I've been waiting for about a month and a half to talk about. So let's put the gloves on.
Yeah, I like it. Andrew is a new face from OIDA. Andrew, who are you, my friend?
Yeah, I'm Andrew King. I've worked in OIDA for about 10 years now. I work in our foundation department. So anything that deals with research and education, that's my forte. I spend most of my time reading government regulations and studies and things like that, which probably sounds a little bit boring, but it's actually kind of interesting. The different nuggets that we find to help our cause and fighting for the rights of truckers. So that's just a little bit about what I do.
When you are talking to your family and friends, do you actually talk to them about your research and regulations? Do you have anybody in your family?
Sometimes it depends on what it is. I might get generalities. I don't get into the details, but yeah, it's not really a good conversation starter.
If it was me and Joe and you at dinner, then it would be a good discussion. But I think we might be the only three people. Yeah. And then my favorite person, Louie, can I still call it OIDA? Or do you want me to start saying OIDA?
You can call it what you'd like to call it, Louie. I just said that's what our president likes to call it, is OIDA. And I guess I do too, because that's what it is really. But hey, whatever you call it. I've heard it called all kinds of things.
I'm intrigued. What else have you heard it called?
OIDA, OIDA, OIDA. We hear all kinds of things. So
okay, that's interesting. Well, give us a background on who you are for those very few people who missed the episode you joined us on.
I'm Louis Pugh. I'm the executive vice president here at OIDA, whose camera doesn't seem to want to work correctly for us.
Anyway, you just did that on purpose, so you'd look really creepy. When
yeah, exactly.
It was flashing.
I don't think I needed to do that to look creepy. But with that being said, my background is completely trucking. I was a small business carrier for over 23 years. I've been in trucking my entire adult life, other than a little bit of time I served for Uncle Sam, where I also drove a truck. From Ohio originally, been to Cleveland lots of times, Joe. I'm down below New Philly in Harrison County, is where I'm from.
Oh, yeah.
And so anyway, I moved out here to Missouri 3 years ago and was elected executive vice president 2 years ago. So that's me.
Very nice. I like it. So Louie, what were your thoughts when I first brought up that article about the driver who, one, said that he was in a sleeper berth when he was driving, but also used a coin to alter the ELD device? Have you ever heard of that?
No, that's a new one on me. I never heard of that. And I mean, I parked my truck in June of 2017, so I never had to run under an ELD, so I didn't get to learn all the tricks of that trade.
Has anybody here heard of any ways to alter the ELDs?
Well, yeah, there's different there's different ways they can do it. Even the apps, if you can go in and you can download an app that looks like the ELD you have, and so when an officer comes, you hand them that. There's other ways to get around it that people can, if you're going to cheat, sometimes you're going to still be creative and find your ways. So.
Yeah. I didn't know about this, but this first thing I thought of was that the regulation requires that the ELD be integrated through the ECM, and it's for exactly those types of situations, so that the engine usage data will show up either through a if there's an accident or imaging of the ECM, or I think maybe even a roadside stop inspection, it can. So, but yeah, if someone wants to cheat, you know, there's a lot of dishonest people out there, and this is a tragedy if that's exactly what happened.
And to be honest, with you, when it comes to the ECM piece, I mean, you can get a chip, and I hate to say it, but you can get a chip to kind of fool the ELD data. Seriously, you know, from right now, you see people doing a lot of different creative things. And one of the things that we talk about to our and make sure that our clients are aware of, like the disconnects and things like that, there's ways around it, even though that it's electronic. Honestly, there's ways to hack into an ELD to make it do what you need it to do. And it's unfortunate, but it's the reality of it. But that speaks of a bigger issue, though. So,
yeah, I was just about to ask you, like, why is everybody going to the effort to change it? Is it just it's hard to maneuver?
Or no, it's real. It's the honest truth. It's electronic. So. And I might be jumping ahead of today's discussion.
That's okay. But
I'm from the old school, and I know Louie is too. And so we're from the schools of the paper log book, right? So I run my paper logs. If I need to get more hours, you know what I do? I take the sheets, I rip them out, I throw them away, and I start a new sheet. So, but there's a root cause of that. You know, if I really, really wanted to maximize my days, and it's, and it really kind of speaks to a lot more of the industry and things that needs to be changed in the industry as a whole. But quite honestly, the fact of the matter of you having an electronic device doesn't really, really kind of bring things home, because you still can alter those things around that device to really make it manipulated to so it can benefit you as a driver, you as the owner operator at the end of the day. So realistically, what is the true meaning and what's the true reason behind having an electronic logging device when it's manipulatable? But to the same standpoint, there's a reason why I, as a driver, would want to manipulate that ELD device. And that's the biggest issue, is why would I want to do that? Why do I even need to do that? And I think that's where we're at.
So why? Like, is there a part of these hours? Okay, so I'm going to take a step back and ask this question even more in depth, because I'm just a dumb lawyer. So when I worked for Schneider, because I haven't had the pleasure of working like Joe Papalotto has helped and defended truck drivers. I haven't. I just worked for Schneider. So I didn't even really pay attention to like all the log stuff and everything. You remember, Joe? Because like Schneider had been on the ELDs for so long. Yeah. It just wasn't a thing. Everybody was already following the regs. But then when ELDs became required, people were flipping the fuck out. And they're like, damn, these ELDs are ruining my whole life, blah, blah, blah. And it took me a while to realize it wasn't the ELDs. It was that for the first time, they actually had to be compliant with the law. So what part of the law is making it hard to be compliant? Like, is there operationally, does anybody have?
There's no flexibility in hours of service. I mean, that's the first problem we have here.
What is it? Sorry, I missed that.
There's no flexibility in hours of service whatsoever. You can't run a man in like a machine. I mean, it's real easy to sit here and say, you're going to sleep 10 hours, you're going to drive 11 hours, and you're going to sleep 10 hours, and you're going to drive 11 hours. It's real easy for you just to sit here and say that. Let's see everybody do that.
Yeah.
There's no flexibility. Everybody has different sleeping patterns. Everybody has different things. I personally have lived through and driven through all the hours of service changes since all this craziness started back in 03 or 04. Yeah. There was much more flexibility prior to 04 when the thing came in, because you could stop the clock on both lines. If you were tired, if you were sick, if you needed to take a break, you could stop the clock because you had 15-hour working day then, if I remember correctly. You could drive for 10, rest for 8, and there was a 15-hour day rule. You couldn't work. But you could stop that clock. Now, you got a 14-hour clock. ELDs, ELDs made that come to the second. It's down to the second now. You don't have 5 minutes. You don't have 10 minutes. It's to the second. So the minute you start in the morning, you got 14 hours to get your day done. And if you're tired or you don't feel good or you want to take a nap or you just want to take a break to wait on traffic to settle down going around Washington, D.C., you can't do that. We see messages from carriers, big carriers that come across Qualcomm's saying, you still have 4 hours of job, driver, get up and go to work. So this is the problem. There's no flexibility for guys to stop and take a break. Well, I'm personally, when I drove a truck, I would get up early in the morning, make my deliveries, make my pickups, truck can get away from a city or a metropolitan area, wherever, till early afternoon, stop eating lunch, take a nap for 3 or 4 hours, whenever I woke up, and go back trucking. And, you know, I say it all the time. I'm more tired sitting behind this desk in this office than I ever was driving a truck, because when I'm here at this office, I have no flexibility. I start at 8 o'clock. I get off at 6, 5:30, 6, whenever. I can't take a nap. I can't stop. I can't take a break. Same thing guys are going through now with ELDs. Whether we like it or not, it comes down to there's no flexibility. It's in hours of service.
And I think the biggest part, too, to kind of piggyback with Louis, is the 14-hour rule when I was a driver was the biggest issue that I faced. Because if I started at 8 a.m. in the morning, right? And if I'm in, just to say I'm in safety training, like if I'm doing some safety training or yard training, and I do the safety training for 6 hours, right? And I'm doing all kind of, you know, you're moving, you're functioning and all that good stuff. And if I got to take a load out at 2 o'clock, that means it tells me that I have to be off of the clock 8 hours later, just because of the fact that in order for me to legally do it, I have to have a 10-hour full break. Huh? But that 14-hour rule, I can talk about a specific example, and I'll never forget this.
Yes, please do.
As a driver. So I used to run a local route, and on Saturdays and Sundays, I was an on-call, right? So if like a driver couldn't cover the route, then I would be the one to do it. So I'm relaxing at home on Sunday, right? All day, right? So I'm a normal human being. I'm not a robot. So I'm relaxing all day on Sunday, you know, maybe watching some football or something like that. 8 o'clock runs around. I'm laying my head down. 9 o'clock, I'm laying my head down. I haven't received a phone call from my company. I get a phone call at 11 o'clock saying, hey, you know what? Such and such, Louis decided that he's not showing up. We need you to run a full night route, right? I've been up all day long. But legally, I have the hours available. But as a human being, like, I'm a normal person. Like, there's no way for me to be able to say I'm going to sleep all day on Sunday and hope Louis decides to call in and we can feel it that way. And I'll never forget one night that happened to me. And I was running the truck up the highway, and I saw a little red Sentra just go past me. And it was sitting on the side of my driver door. So I'm just sitting there watching it, and we kind of cruising down the highway at the same time. And then the next thing I look up, it just disappeared in the thin air. Right? That's a micro sleep. I fell asleep at the wheel. Oh. And the thing about that is that I'm a human being. And the thing is that 14-hour rule is so robotic, right? That's the reason why a lot of times that we have to alter, we have to do things to manipulate it, because I think not only does the driver own that manipulation society on the driver, I think the companies own that too. So, you know, I think the companies own the fact that, you know, hey, just for instance, like, you know, you got drivers that are on call. They just expect, okay, everything is, as long as it's here digitally, as long as it shows that the driver has got the hours available, that doesn't predicate whether or not I'm tired or not. Like, that has nothing to do with that.
Well, what I hear Louis saying, and, you know, I'm not speaking for you, is that it's the 10 consecutive hours that you have to be off duty to start a new clock. Is that what you're saying? I mean, because it wasn't always like that. You could take those breaks, but now for some time, the break, whatever you do, and by the way, there is no regulation that requires the amount of sleep a driver has to have. Nothing. There's nothing in there that says of those 10 hours, how much that has to be sleep. I'm not criticizing that because how could they do that? But people look at me cross-eyed when I say that, but I'm right. They're the only regulation.
I didn't know that.
it says you have to take 10 consecutive hours off, now 7, used to be 8 in the sleeper berth, but it doesn't say how long you have to sleep. There's no federal regulation that says that. There is one, 392.3, Adam, to address your point. I don't want to get all pedantic and teachy here, but it does say that you can't operate, and the motor carrier can't permit or require you to operate if you're ill or fatigued. So in your hypothetical, technically, and nobody would ever do this, I don't think you would turn down the load and say, you know what, I'm really tired. I haven't been getting rest today. Technically under the rule. I'm not.
Yeah, that sounds good.
I know. You do that in the carrier.
Yeah. And you don't have a job. Yeah, it sounds good.
Absolutely.
But they put it on your doc report and no other carrier will hire you.
No, you're right. And the corollary to that is, God forbid there's an accident, they shove 392.3 in front of you. Mr. Driver, what'd you do that day? And I had one like this. I won't say we were completely innocent, my trucking company, but a mom died and her son became a completely disabled, and another boy was made a paraplegic. And it's all because the driver that hit into the back of that car and shoved it into the rear of our truck, we were stopped in traffic. You know, the first question he was asked by the cops was, what did you do yesterday? Because it happened on a Monday. Mm-hmm. And he said, I pitched hay at my farm all day. And then they said, were you tired? And he said, yeah. And he said, well, what happened? And the guy said, I fell asleep. So that guy was off. He had a, you know, like a 45-hour restart over the weekend. Everything looks good from the regs, but he was dead tired. So, you know, what we're saying, I hear you guys, is you can't legislate good practice. And maybe it is better to have that non-consecutive where you can take those rests, Louie. I don't know, but, you know, that's not what's in the law now.
You know, another thing that I ran into, too, and this is another good example of why the consecutives may not work as well, is because I was a team driver at one point as well. And as a team driver, I am supposed to, once I drive my 11 straight hours like a robot, I am supposed to go in the back of the sleeper berth while Louis's driving, and I am supposed to sleep 10 consecutive hours while he's Jake braking, curving, and doing everything else up and down the highway. And I'm supposed to be well rested enough in time so when Louis's 11 hours is up, guess what? I've got to get behind the wheel and I've got to do the same exact thing. And Louis's got to sleep while I'm Jake braking down the highway and doing everything else. So it's too rigid, to be honest with you. And the biggest thing is you can't, just like you said, Joe, you can't legislate how I feel. And when you go to the 34-hour reset, that's not a reset. When I'm not doing a 34, if I'm coming home and I've been away from my, you know, from my house for 2 weeks, on 34 hours, you think I'm asleep or I'm going to rest? Man, I got to cut grass. I got to do whatever's on the to-do list. I've got to do chores around the house. I might be dog tired because I got to prepare my household for me to leave again for another 2 straight weeks. Mm. And that's an issue. That's an issue because that's not true rest.
And that's an issue with an ELD, in my opinion, because all that ELD does is tell you what that truck does. It doesn't tell you what you're doing. It doesn't say where the driver's at, or it tells you what the truck's doing. That's all that ELD does.
Wait, is it the ELD that's a problem, or is it the actual regulations are now being enforced by the ELD?
I think it's the law being enforced by the ELD, in my opinion.
Yeah, so the law was the problem, right? Or you disagree, Louis?
I don't have a problem with anyone who wants to run an ELD or make it work. I understand why big carriers. I don't agree that an ELD should be a mandate as far as ELDs. It is. The good thing about the ELD, and you can roll your eyes if you want, but we've got proof, and Andrew can solve that, that carriers that had ELDs and prior to this being a mandate were less safer than carriers that did. Because it puts these guys, because again, it does show the fact that we don't have any flexibility in the hours of service. That's the only good thing that I can say came out of this mandate. It proved that hours of service is broken. It's been broken. Every time they monkeyed with it, they broke it more, in my opinion. people mm-hmm. cannot be run like machines. If you talk to drivers today, and we talk to lots of them who have ELDs, there are some who like them, and then that's fine. But most say the same thing. It causes me to feel like I'm playing beat the clock. It causes me to stress. It causes me to be less productive. Causes me to speed and lower in construction zones and act unsafe in other places to try to make up time. Because again, we're stuck with that 14-hour clock that you cannot stop.
And you know, just to be more of a jerk on these regulations, the passenger carrying rules are different. They allow 15 hours of on-duty time, but of course they only allow 10 hours of driving. So why that is, I don't know. I mean, I guess it has to do with tour buses, you know, or something, but there are different rules for passenger, you know, with 40 or so lives in your hands than there is for someone who's carrying very valuable freight. But still, I don't know. I mean, go ahead.
And I was just going to say, you also, as a driver, there's so many things when you start your day with great intentions and everything goes out of control as no fault of your own. For example, we all heard about the whole Bridgegate thing a few years ago in New York City. You know, going in there, they shut down the construction and the GW Bridge for hours. That was on a Sunday night. I was on my way into Queens to make a delivery that I made every Monday morning. I had plenty of time. I left my house in the afternoon when I should have. I'm the last truck going through the toll booth when they shut the bridge on GB at the GB at the George Washington Bridge. I'm sorry. With that being said, I sat there for 4.5 hours. Now I'm out of my 14. I ran it over. Here I sit. They finally opened a bridge. I still got 20 miles to go or so. I had to go. I can't sleep on the side of the bridge. You know, what do you do? This is the stuff that drivers get positions that they get put into, no flexibility. Yeah. Lots of times I would stop in Jessup, Maryland on my way down 95 to Richmond and take a nap in the middle of the afternoon so I did not have to fight that Washington, D.C. traffic. Mm-hmm. What's safer, sitting in Jessup taking a three-hour nap and leaving at 6 o'clock in the evening or at 3:30 trying to fight my way through Washington, D.C. with everybody else out there? Again, this is the stuff that causes accidents.
Whoa. Okay, wait a second. First of all, I'm going to hit on that point in just a minute, but we have so many good comments and questions coming through. I've been watching them, and they're, a lot of them are exactly the questions I have, because like I said, I'm not too experienced with this, but after hearing from Adam and Louie, I'm starting to get a feel for the how inflexible this is, but, and we'll address the flip side of that too. Okay. Vitaly is a very famous Madtropolis member from Toronto. Man, he was asking a question earlier that was the same as mine, which was, it was a very simple question. It was, if you do need a break, is there not a pause button, stop button? Like, hey, I got to take a break for the next 4 hours. I'm freaking exhausted. I pause it.
Under the new hours of service, in a way, yes, with the split sleeper, you could, and the new pilot program that they're trying to do, yes, you could to a certain extent, but for the most part, no, you can. And, you know, and I apologize, I've been jumping in and out with the internet here, but, you know, the hours of service originally was supposed to help protect drivers from being worked long hours, and now it's become the standard. Yes.
The purpose was to protect the public?
Well, it's a little bit of both, but it came out in the 1930s, and they were worried about carriers, companies working their drivers so hard, right? And so they give these regulations to control when they can work, but now it becomes the standard work week. Instead of a maximum, it becomes kind of like the floor. That's what you're going to go to.
Oh.
And now, with the way things are, especially with e-commerce and on-time delivery and stuff, you know, they've run very hard. And so you can't exactly just stop the clock whenever you want.
Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, I don't know if I mentioned it. The tour bus driver only has to get 8 consecutive hours off duty.
Yeah,
not 10
on a bus. Yeah,
yeah. Well, and I, you know, I'm sure that's
typical American. The commodities are more important than the fucking people.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's because people want to get go on their tour, you know, to get the next day of the trip. That's what I'm guessing. I don't know, but yeah, why they only need 8 and we need, you know, our guys need 10, our men and women need 10. I don't know, but somebody came up with this stuff. And, you know, just so you know, I've been doing this, like I said, for 4 years, and the agency will tell you, well, we've had experts look at this. You know, we've had sleep experts. And if I've learned anything in my life about trying lawsuits, it's that you can get an expert to say anything you want, anything, as long as you're paying them. And they'll say, you know, we've learned this on the coronavirus. Someone said there's going to be 2 million dead. Someone said there's going to be 100,000. I don't know. But they're all experts. And I always tell the jury that the definition of an expert is someone who has a PhD and lives more than 100 miles away from the courthouse. So,
well, and what you just mentioned is you know, with me and the foundation, that's what we deal with all the time. We're always getting research that comes through. You can get a study to say anything that you want it to say. Yeah. When you dig into it, and especially FMCSA is very notorious for we believe science, and you can easily pick it apart, which is part of what I do. That they are already looking for, you know, they're wanting a certain thing to come out, and the people that they give the studies to, they know that.
Well, yeah,
you know, they're supposed to be competitive grant, right? But they're going to produce a research, a study that's going to give FMCSA what they desire, and they usually have lots of limitations. And that's where most people don't, you know, they don't look any bit further. When there's a little bit of math or some statistics, people just, oh, it must be true. But there are a lot of problems with that.
What is OIDA's OOIDA or whatever? I like saying OIDA. Okay, people, sorry, Mr. President or Mrs. President. What's your position on these hours of service regulations? Like, you guys want them completely gone? You guys have some better ideas? I haven't been keeping track of what you guys have been working on, if anything.
Well, the last hours of service that just came out, we're the ones who started that, and we were the ones that filed the petition with FMCSA to get the ball rolling. Of course, we didn't get everything we'd like. We'd like to see more flexibility. We understand the predicament that FMCSA is in. They have to please industry. They have to please safety. It's a tight rope, and, you know, no matter what they do, it seems like they get sued. We've sued them. Safety people sued them. Somebody's always suing them. With that, we understand, you know, the biggest, that there has to be rules and there has to be regulations. The one thing I would say, though, which I always think is interesting, and in fact this happened the one time I was giving comments on an hour service listening session in Washington FMCSA, whenever we have any kind of catastrophe in this country, whether it's a hurricane or fires or right now coronavirus.
I think it's interesting too, Louis.
Everything of ours as service are completely exempt.
Fuck off.
And the thing is, there's never mass accidents. There's never any crashes. There's never any fatigue driver issues. There's nothing. So when guys are out there under these, they're not having these problems. Now, again, I'm not going to sit here and deny the fact that some people push the envelope at times, because they do. That's just unfortunate. But again, I don't think it's fair that a guy like me, who had 2.5 million miles of safe driving, no accident, ran his own business. I've proven that I'm safe. I'm proven that I know when I need to rest and don't need to rest. I think I've proven that in 2.5 million miles. With that said, why do I have to follow the same rules and regulations of our service that some guy that just got a CDL?
But see, you know, the thing about it, just that kind of goes to the point, honestly, and Louis, you hit on a point that, you know, honestly, it's really not the issue with the ELD, it's the hours of service, you know, because you can't, I mean, it's too rigid, you know, and, you know, I'm another one who had plenty of miles on the road, approaching 1 million miles on the road, and no accidents, no tickets, no anything, and I was able to govern myself accordingly. But that doesn't mean that Andrew, just getting started, you know, Andrew's trying to get himself in the game. That doesn't mean that he's going to follow the same path. So I understand there has to be some sort of regulations. It's a federally mandated industry. It's just like the airline industry, right? So it's just like, you know, airline pilots have to go through the same type of stipulations to ensure that they at least marginalize the risk, right? So they're marginalizing the risk. They can't eliminate the risk, but they marginalize the risk. But the problem is that if I look at the hour of the service, it has so many buckets of it. You got the 30-minute break that you have to have.
So confusing.
Right? That's another thing. Like, that's ridiculous. Like, you have to take it. You've got the 14-hour. You've got, okay, you can't drive no more than 11 hours. But all of these things just add to a perfect storm where drivers, as a driver, and somebody made a point, and we talked about this earlier, you know, why don't you just tell dispatch you're not going to take the load? That's not how that works. Yeah, good luck on that.
I know. So, I'm just saying there's a reg that says you can't drive when you're tired.
I'm not saying you. I'm just saying I'm being in general because it's not you. It's just how it works. You know, you've got dispatchers out here that are just pushing. They're just pushing the envelope. They're pushing the envelope. And if you have the hours, if Lou's got the hours, right? And Lou tells me that looking on his clock, he's got 9 hours left on the day, and Lou tells me he's tired, and I got a hot load on one of my best customers, right? A customer that's been our best customer that needs a hot shipment done, and Lou's right there, and Lou tells me he's tired and he can't take the load. Lou's not going to feel really good after that final of that conversation that I have with him if I'm the dispatcher. Yeah. And that's the issue.
That's the issue, and I'll tell you what else is an issue that goes hand in hand with this, and that's driver pay. Especially these big carriers. Unfortunately, we are in a model in trucking. It's a piece work pay. If drivers were paid for their time and for what they actually do, and were paid for sitting around shippers and sitting around receivers for hours on end, which makes them tired more than driving the truck, would we even be having any of these conversations? Mm-hmm. If this, you know, carriers would step up.
Do big carriers pay for that? Do big carriers pay their company drivers?
No. The main carriers that pay drivers for all their time are mainly your LTL carriers, Teamster carriers. I'm not saying there's not some that aren't, but that's your main ones. Your major big carriers that we see running up and down the road all the time, it's all piece, all by the mile. They get paid by the mile.
Here's another point that I've always thought about. By the way, Louis, you know that the regulations that you filed a petition for, and you said you didn't get everything you wanted, but you know it's good. You know, it's better. I made a list of some of the people that opposed it were the Teamsters. Parents Against Tired Truckers, the Truck Safety Coalition, all of these. So a lot of people, a lot of groups, just to go back to, there's two sides every story. A lot of groups opposed the very changes that you say are better, but not, you know, great. And including the Teamsters. Maybe it's because of the pay issue. I don't know why they do what they do. I saw the movie Hoffa, but you know. I heard you paying houses.
I can answer. I think your question, but go ahead.
No, and the other thing I have always, as a lawyer, you know, I can't even drive a stick shift. I'm not a truck driver, but the broadness of the definition of on duty in 395.2, it is everything. I mean, when you're sitting there. That poor truck driver is sitting there because the lumper or someone is eating lunch or doing something, and they're sitting there being detained. That's on duty time for the most part. And I mean, it's everything. And that counts against your 14 hours, which is how we started this discussion. I think that is objectionable. But, you know, legally, you can't get around it, and it is what it is.
Unfortunately, Joe, a lot of these big carriers, they exempt themselves from having to pay guys because they give them a little card that's saying when they're being unloaded or whatever, if they're as long as they're not helping with loading or unloading, they're not on duty, they don't have, so those guys can go down and log that off duty. And that's how they get around. Truckers are exempt from the Fair Labor Standards Act of overtime. That's where a lot of this comes down back to again, and I know we're here to talk about our service, but it goes hand in hand with driver pay and driver salaries. They haven't kept up with inflation since the 1970s.
Yeah.
And big carriers continue to push this phony driver shortage message to keep wages down. And again, we've just created this nightmare.
Right. When you have the turnover rate that those large carriers have, some of them are over 100%. How do you have over 100% turnover and have a driver shortage? That doesn't make any sense. And even looking at FMCSA's own numbers, when you have like 400,000 new CDL holders every year, and I think 70% of those are Class A CDL holders, how do you have a driver shortage? And yet that's the message they push, and then seek for things like Drive Safe Act, which would hire, you know, would be able to allow 18-year-olds to drive in interstate commerce. Then you have a greater source to pull cheap labor from. So right. there's a lot of statistics that show, and even the Bureau of Labor Statistics came out with a report last year, I believe it was, showing that there's no way that there's a driver shortage. They've been claiming a driver shortage for 20 plus years, more than that. And yet, you know.
I think they call it that way because of the fact that there, to me, it's not I will agree to some extent that there may be a shortage, but it's not a driver shortage. It's a qualified driver shortage. We have a shortage of qualified drivers. Correct. We've got a shortage of drivers that can operate legally and safely, that have the requirements to be able to get behind the wheel. Some of them can't even drive manual transmissions anymore. So when you think about a qualified driver, there's a shortage on qualified drivers. Yes. And then when you think about the lifestyle hasn't changed. It's not changed, though. So when I started driving 20 years ago, it was 2 weeks out, 2 days home. It hasn't changed. It's still the same message. There's no flexibility in that. There's seniority, right? So if Louis's been around 20 years, yeah, he's going to get the best route. Adam comes in. Adam's a rookie. Adam's going to get those 2 weeks out, 1 week, one or 2 days at home. I don't want to, you know, you'll say that. And if you've never done it before, it's, oh man, it looks great to get behind the wheel of a truck and it feels good. Stay out 2-3 days, 4 days at a time, and then see how that starts to feel on you as far as that willing. As a, you know, I'm telling you, homesickness is real.
And that all plays back into what Joe brought his point earlier of, if you're tired or you don't feel well, that they can't force you to drive. But unfortunately, that's why they do, because they don't care if you quit, because there's 10 other guys that they can, and that they don't have to. And which another real problem we have that plays into some of this, there's no set training standards. You know, they can just, you know, you go 1,600 hours to cut somebody's hair. But if you can get a CDL and you can pass a physical, you can go drive a truck. You don't have to have any training. Maybe if these carriers had to put some time and investment into these guys, pay them correctly, a lot of these hour services issues that we're talking about, some we agree and disagree, wouldn't even be up for discussion.
Go ahead, Joe.
They're putting in the entry-level driver training standards, but I think they put that on hold again, Andrew. Am I right?
Yes. Yep, it's pushed back, I think, till 2023.
2022, I think.
Okay. It was supposed to be this year, and then it got pushed back. And that's been something that's been mandated by Congress for a long time. OIDA has been fighting for that since almost its inception, driver training.
And we'd like to see it a lot.
Comments. A lot of people in the comments are asking, can we just make it, hey, drivers can't drive longer than 14 hours or something, just a blanket rule. You can't drive longer than these amount of hours. Joe, is that a better option, more flexible? A lot of people had that question.
I don't know. You can still work after 14 hours, you just can't drive. But a lot of people don't know that distinction. I don't know how much it comes up. But you cannot drive after 14 hours. But I don't know. I mean, you know, this is impossible to resolve because of the very things that people are talking about. I think more flexibility would be great. But somewhere along the line, this 10-hour consecutive off-duty thing got embedded. And that is, you know, I think that's even more sacrosanct than the split sleeper. I mean, I remember, who was it? I forget which administrator it was. They've had so many. Said there will never be another split sleeper regulation. Well, we have it kind of now, but it's still you're still within.
Thank you, Jim Mullen.
A great guy.
I love Jim.
I wish him well in his new world. Good man. Happy. Anyways, but it's still, even with the 7 and 2, you still have to have the 10 consecutive off. So I don't know. Maybe that there's a lot of problems with these regulations. I agree, and they're really hard to defend in lawsuits because they're so difficult.
Yeah. So. I mean, it's even difficult to understand, Joe. Like, to anybody who's, I see a lot of shippers in this thing. You guys should like Google hours of service and just read.
We have
them.
A class on that.
They're actually really hard to understand. Yeah. I want to flip this discussion really quick because I'm very passionate on this topic and a tiny bit biased. Look at Lou. He's already like, oh, Jesus. Okay. Let's say we completely remove hours of service regulations in this hypothetical world. So, Joe, what does fatigue look like in your world with regards to accidents and lawsuits and everything else?
Well, it's by far the first thing they go after. I mean, I actually found in the last 2 years, three gigantic fatigue verdicts through 2019 from 2019. And one was $280 million for a single death. One was $260 million for two deaths, I think. And one was $80 million, including $25 million in punitive damages down in Texas. So, look, I mean, if you have a rear-end accident or some kind of accident that's otherwise not real explainable, the plaintiff's lawyer will go through a progression of questions. It was clear. It was dry, straight road, sunny, blah, blah, blah. Therefore, do you have any possible explanation of this accident other than fatigue? That's where they're going. The fatigue is numero uno. I have a thing I call the Dirty Five of the five things that plaintiff's lawyers work on the most. But fatigue's number one, always has been, because that terrifies people. You know, a tire truck, whether it's true or not, how you prove it.
Terrifies me.
They prove it by working backward from the accident, that there can be no possible other explanation. And then they get someone to say the guy was fatigued. And it depends on the judge if they'll allow an expert to say that or not, because, you know, we argue it has to be a sleep scientist, a doctor. But they'll get one of the, I won't say the word I want to say, one of the lady of the evening experts out there who will say, mm-hmm. Oh, he was clearly tired. You can tell he was tired. Look at this accident. Mm-hmm. No other explanation. Mm-hmm. And then the jury sees a family that's devastated, and you know, so they start with fatigue, and then they move on to distracted driving and drugs and alcohol and training and maintenance. Those are the five. So it's number one, and it always has been in my world. They love to imply fatigue.
And is it a love, or I often wonder, because you know. These a lot of the trucking companies I've either consulted for or worked for, they had the stability control alerts. So often when the truck starts,
good luck with that.
And the truck's often like going off the road, and the driver manager calls them and they're like, what's going on? And usually it's at least from what my experience, usually it's fatigue. They're like tired, they've been working their asses off and they're tired. So fatigue, in my experience, has been tightly correlated with accidents. So when people say, get rid of the regulations entirely, let these truck drivers just drive, I get panicked because I'm like, well, Jesus, they're already bad accidents. And Louie, I've already told you, I have accidents where this guy over here was fucking around with his ELD and he was driving and then he rear ends a bunch of people and kills somebody. Joe could probably name 50 different cases that he's defended where truck driver was tired and caused the accident. It was driving too long. So we've got this problem over here, fatigue in the public. And then we've got this problem over here where ELDs are actually the law, not the ALDs. And the inflexibility of the law is just causing problems in the trucking industry to begin with. So what's the solution, Louie? If you had the magic wand, what do you want to do?
Again, I said in the beginning, we need more flexibility in hours of service. But that's not.
What does that look like? Give me a specific.
But again, you're trying to. You're trying to answer all questions with one simple thing. There isn't a simple answer to this problem. It's pay. It's training. There's all these other factors that come into it. And instead, we have. And no offense, but what carriers want to do is they want to throw in all these little newest, greatest gadgets like your lane departure systems and all this stuff. We'll put this stuff on the truck, and still the root of the problem comes down, we're not training the guys how to drive the trucks properly and safely.
And wait, hold on 1 minute. We got to back up because there are trucking companies that are training people very well to drive
if
the trucks.
If you think a two-week school in Green Bay, Wisconsin teaches you how to drive a truck, then I'm sorry, you're completely mistaken.
Okay, well, it's not 2 weeks. It's actually a lot of training that goes into it, but there are trucking companies that are
I went to trucking training when I drove a truck. I went through the one big carriers training. It was 2 weeks of people driving around learning how to pass the CDL test. That's
Louis,
what they're training.
How long ago was that?
There's no set standards in training. There's no company. It's not happening. We know this. We put these little gadgets on our trucks and all that stuff. That's the training. There's hardly anybody that's getting, again, it's 1,600 hours of training to cut somebody's hair. I don't think that's quite as dangerous as driving a truck.
That's actually a good point. That's actually a good point. I was just thinking about that earlier.
I know people. I have a friend who lays floor. He had to be an apprentice to put flooring down for 5 years before he became a journeyman to put tile floor down.
Okay.
Most of these trucking schools are 2 to 6 weeks at the most. Guys, you know, you're taking a guy in Florida. He's training for, let's say he trains for 6 weeks. Okay, he gets in a truck and it's December and let's send this guy to Colorado. He may never seen a mountain. He may never seen snow or anything. And all of a sudden, we've turned him loose in a truck.
But see, that brings up to the point that the actual carrier, in my opinion, has a lower barrier entry too. So in order for you to be a carrier, lower barrier entry is there as well. I went through truck driver training school. I went through the 2 weeks that you spoke of, and I turned out just fine just because of the way I approached it. But there's always going to be a variance of interpretation of the training you receive. Just because you go through training for 9 weeks doesn't mean that you're not going to get on your first load and tip the truck over. That means absolutely nothing. At least you have the tools for it. But I don't think that that's the thing that solves that point. I think that the biggest thing behind that is this, we go back to our original point, and I do agree with Louis stating. There are other issues that are boiling down into it. Driver pay is a very big issue. Detention pay not being received is a very big issue. There's a lot of things that kind of dial down into that, but I truly believe that if we look at it as a holistic view, the biggest thing that needs to change is not necessarily just the hours of service. There's industry changes that have to take place first.
Right.
Okay. So, Elida, what's your next big initiative? Like, it sounds like you guys have some work to do.
No, we've been doing this work for years. If you would do a little research, you'll see we've been pushing for driver training, driver pay, removal of the overtime exemption, Fair Labor Standards Act, hours of service. These are things that we've been fighting and fighting and fighting and arguing with the Congress.
If it's as good as you've been doing with the whole, what was that, transparency thing? No, you haven't been doing that great of a job. So tell me what you have it. If it was as good as the transparency thing, so how about you have a platform right now that you are on where shippers and brokers and Joe Papalardo and Adam are on. You have people who can get behind you. It's not just OIDA. So tell us what you want us to get behind, and don't be vague. Like, I want to know, Louis. I want to know, like, what is the actual change to the hours of service that you want to make? What do you want to do with driver pay? Like, tell us what you want us to get behind, and we'll support you.
Removal of the Fair Labor Standards Act, or the overtime exemption in the Fair Labor Standard Act is one thing that we would like to see done. Okay. Entry-level driver training, we'd like CFMCSA get on that. It should have already been done, and it probably should be much stricter than what they agreed on in the first place.
Okay.
I agree with that.
As far as hours of service, our petition, again, for those of us who didn't do very good and isn't doing very good, like you said, Cassandra, we're the reason that hours of service got changed this last time, because we're the ones that put the petition in. We started that. Nobody else, us. So, yeah, we have done lots of good things. The one thing that we did not get was the 3 hours of extra flexibility that we asked for guys to be able, the driver, not the carrier, not the shipper, not the receiver, the driver to be allowed to take a break for up to 3 hours to stop that clock, to allow him to sleep, allow him to wait on traffic, allow him to take a shower, whatever he wants to do. With that being said, the National Consumer Complaint Database, FMCSA, needs to step up and watch that and take severe action against carriers that are complaining about on that instead of ignoring that, because the fear is if they get the 3 hours, and this is where I think the Teamsters had issue with some of the flexibility, they're afraid that carriers will make drivers have to take those 3 hours to make up for a shipper detaining them or traffic or whatever. It shouldn't be a carrier's choice. It should be the driver's. And if a carrier tries to force that, a driver should have a place to take, a whistleblower place to take that to, so FMCSA can go after the carrier.
So, Louis, would that 3 hours then count toward their 10, just not consecutive?
It wouldn't count toward their 10. It was a complete three-hour break, like the old days, Joe.
Yeah.
When you could stop. That's the way, up to 3 hours is what we'd like to see the 30-minute thing go away. It makes no sense, the 30-minute.
Yeah, that's weird. I agree.
More tech, but it's better now.
Yeah, because than it was. It's driving, not duty time. And they can, yeah, and they can actually do, they can do paperwork and stuff during that 30 minutes.
Exactly.
That's a little bit of a change. Yeah.
And Joe brought up a wonderful point in the beginning. These hours of service, all they do is tell you where a truck is. It doesn't have anything to do with whether that driver's sleeping, playing video games. You don't know what that driver's doing.
That's true. I want, Louie, have you ever had another organization such as TIA back some of your bills?
Yes. If they worked. And the other thing that I would like to see, you asked me what we want.
Yeah, what do you want?
Right now, we have a bill in the House, H.R. 610-4, for parking, because one of the biggest issues out here is there's not enough places for guys to park and get safe rest. We put a bill out that would allow the government to take money that's already in highway trust fund, reserve those funds, just like they do reserve funds for railroad crossing grades, but to build more parking, not to do studies, not to do research, to pour pavement, to put gravel down, whatever.
He's right.
And a bid, and it's a bid process where the states have to bid to get some of that money. Support stuff like that. These are all good things that are needed in this industry right now, today.
Okay. I'm going to add, I want to add to this. So if I had a magic wand, right, I want industry standard hiring for brokers and shippers hiring a carrier. No one's going to like me saying this, but I don't think that any broker or shipper should have access to a carrier's data regarding their hours of service. So you know how the brokers and the shippers can see where the carrier is, their speed, and how many hours they have left. I don't think they should have access to that shit. They shouldn't know, and it's irrelevant how many hours they have left. So I think there's a lot of things that I have, like, this dream about, right? So it's helpful to hear this, Louis and Andrew. And I think that people from Metropolis would want to know, how can we help? How can we get behind whatever you're working on or going to work on? Minus the stupid transparency thing. That was a waste of your time and money.
Your stupid transparency thing plays into the same roles as things we're talking about, because some brokers are unscrupulous and do not pay drivers correctly or pay their trucks correctly.
So I believe it, but I don't think transparency is ever going to help that situation. I really don't.
Well, it would allow the driver to at least have the option to whether he wants to continue to work for an unscrupulous broker.
Okay. There's a lot of unscrupulous carriers and shippers out there, too, so we could just go down that whole completely.
I'm not talking about shippers. I'm talking about truckers.
Andrew Teal says that I've never worked anywhere where the carrier knew an individual's hours of service status. It's a new thing that brokers and shippers can see it, like, on their database or on their internal site, if they integrate with the carrier's ELD or get that data somehow, they can see the speed, they can see the location, how many hours are left, and brokers and shippers are very, very curious about how many hours are left with that driver's.
Of course, now that opens up a whole Pandora's box of shippers and brokers getting sued for the actions of the motor carrier and the trucking
company.
Excellent
point.
So be careful what you wish for.
Excellent.
The more data they have, the more they're going to be asked, then why did you let them, why did you continue using them?
Right.
Very,
and they're going
to
get their ass sued just like they're going to get their ass sued just as if they were the trucking company or the driver. So
Australia has a chain of responsibility law where everyone within the supply chain is held accountable to some extent. Now, it's not always, maybe it's not the best implemented, but in that case, the shipper, the receiver, the broker, they could all be held liable. They all have responsibility. It's a chain of responsibility. And that would be something, even coercion is something that WIDA also helped. Not that it could be a lot better than it is right now. That's another thing where we have done good in helping.
And there's a federal anti-coercion statute, isn't there?
Yeah,
Louis. I don't like that one either.
Well, anything that would make more business for me is I'm for it.
Adam, if you had a magic wand,
what do you like that's good for truckers? Let me ask you that, because so far most of the stuff you say you don't like.
I don't. Okay, so here's I like. Oh wait, are you talking to Joe or to me?
To you, Joe. Easily, he understands. Joe, I know. Joe's going right on thing. I'm asking
Sandra's
you.
Sandra's cynical because she's right in the middle between shippers and brokers and carriers all day long. Big carriers and smaller carriers. Who'd you hang up on, Louie? Was that your wife calling you?
I don't have a wife.
Was that Andrew
I'm
calling
married
you?
To trucking, man.
I'm married to trucking. I will tell you, Louie, that it sounds like we need better hours of service. I'm all about that. I'm also better. I am all about a barrier to entry. I don't think you should be able to go online and for $100 be able to be a fucking motor carrier. That's nice. You should have put your effort towards that instead of transparency, because that would solve your driver pay problem. The higher barrier to entry means you have to pay more for drivers. You have to
maybe
pay more
brokers
carriers.
Should have a higher thing of entry too, like maybe $1 million bond instead of a $75,000 bond.
I do agree.
We see everyday drivers are so.
And that's one thing too.
Let's see some brokers have a higher thing entry.
I agree with that.
And they have
carriers.
I hope they address, maybe I won't, Louie won't like this, but I hope they finally address, before the last president came in, they were almost all set to have criteria to do sleep studies and address the obstructive sleep apnea.
Yeah,
and that got put away.
Big problem.
I think it's a big problem, and the CPAP, fine, but and people can be treated for it. I think there's a lot of truckers who have it and they're afraid to admit it. And I think if there was treatment for it, we'd have a lot safer people on the road. That's my
belief. I agree.
And I
hear more than that. Those micro sleeps, don't they come from sleep apnea as well, Joe?
Yeah.
Adam,
as a matter of fact,
about?
I've been sleeping quite a bit during this hour. So. Just
Andrew, what do you got to say about that?
Can you hear me? My camera's muted. Can you still hear
me?
OSA is an issue that we've followed for a long time. The mandatory training of obstructive sleep apnea would be one of the most costliest things, and I don't believe that it's necessary, especially because of the indicators that people use, like BMI, body mass index, is one of the most worst indicators for sleep apnea, and it's one of the biggest ones that's used today. And to mandate, and I know, Joe, you said maybe not necessarily CPAP, but to mandate also a type of treatment like a CPAP, which is not necessary. Most people who have any form of sleep apnea, it's positional sleep apnea. It's a lot of people will turn over on their back, and you can fix that with little things. You don't necessarily need to go out and get a CPAP machine.
Well, those regulations had 9 criteria, and you had to have like 7 of them or 4 of them or whatever.
Three. Originally, though, it was just BMI, but the three are your BMI, you're a male,
your age,
and you're over
age. Yeah.
Well,
so,
I mean,
but why do you not like those? Those are really good indicators of sleep apnea.
There were 9 of them, but that, look, there's got to be some way. It's not even it's not even addressed except in a footnote in Part 391 in the medical qualifications. Yeah. I mean, they just say respiratory. And then there's a footnote that even mentions the words. I'm kind of a big, you know, I've seen a lot of truck drivers that I know have it. And, you know, I mean, it's for their protection, too. The last three cases I've gotten, not the last three, but in the last month, I've gotten three cases where the truck driver died, too, in addition to fatalities on the other side. So,
well,
I don't want truck drivers getting hurt either.
Sure, neither do we. And the other side of that we see, I know this is a little bit off topic somewhat, but you have a lot of drivers who might work for, if they get sent to a certain kind of clinic, and I'm trying to remember the name of the one, Louie, that we have lots of problems with, you know, what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know the clinic at Solentra or something like that.
Yes, right. So when they're going and get their DOT physical, they also have an invested interest for you to go get a $2,000 polysonogram, you know, and that's an issue as well. And maybe that might seem small to some, because obviously we don't want anyone to get hurt either.
No, no one thinks $2,000 is small.
But
I know, Andrew, you and your research, maybe it's not small, but that's small. That's big.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money.
It is. You guys, this has been an amazing conversation. Adam, you've been a little quiet. Do you want to close it out, Adam, with your final thoughts, and then we can go?
Yeah, you know, and it's been definitely a great conversation. I think it's one of these conversations that's going to be ongoing. I am big on solutions, so, you know, we can have conversations like these all day long, but if we're not coming up with something fruitful that can actually push the position to move the industry in the right direction, I think these conversations can't just stop here. I'm very supportive of changing these hours of service rules. You know, whatever myself or my team needs to do to support that, I'm 100% to do that, but we have to move it in a direction to where we can actually see the right change. I do think it's systemic. I don't think I don't think there's a magic wand solution. I think it's systemic. I think there's a lot of different things that can change that will just be domino effects to help improve those things in the industry. You know, driver pay, hours of service, all of that stuff kind of intertwines itself. And I do believe that the exemptions are a big issue, you know, especially with the overtime piece. I think that's another big piece of it as well. And then everybody is different, you know, and, you know, if you've never been behind the wheel of a truck, and I hate to say this for the people that's on here, it's different. Fatigue is different. If I'm pulling a tractor trailer up and down the highway and I'm fully loaded, 80,000 pounds pulling through the mountains, I'm going to feel very, very different than you in your Honda Civic on cruise control at driving 17 hours a day. 4 hours of mountain driving for me may feel like 8 hours of driving in realistic situations. So fatigue is also, it's measured differently. And if the and maybe I'm out of pocket for saying this, but we have so many people that are making laws and making decisions that never experience the actual behind the wheel effect that driving has for you. So for those that know, I mean, you even your seat, right? So your seat sits on a slide. And it sits on a slide to try to help you from fatigue, because that thing jerks you back and forth all day long. So you're going up and down the highway, getting yanked all the way down the highway for 10 hours, 11 hours during the day. That beats you up. So until we have some true understanding, until we have some true conversations to where we have folks in that making decisions, right? People that are making decisions that are or at least helping educate people in the decision-making process that has actually felt what it's like to sit behind the wheel, it's totally different. And the thing that I want to say is that if we as an industry decide that we're going to make a push to move forward, then these conversations need to go to a different level. And if that means, Louis, we need to get on the phone and we need to see what we need to do. If we need to bang our heads together and make a better decision where we can support OIDA in a different way, since you guys got the biggest voice, then guess what? Then that's what we need to do.
Yeah. I'm with you, Louis, on some of the stuff. And keep us, Louis will tell me what you guys are working on, and then I'll try to push it out and help. And we got Joe P. He's amazing, although he's very, very busy.
He's got to be amazing. Everybody from Ohio is amazing.
Well, you'll come and see me. There's a masthead brewery right next to my office, and we'll have one when coronavirus is over. You'll come up.
Yeah.
Next time I'm in Ohio, I'm in Missouri right now, but next time I get back, we'll have to make it.
Okay. You know where to find me.
We'll have to do that.
All Joe's clients were calling earlier, so he's ready to go. He's got to make money. But thank you guys very much. And I hope we get somewhere with this topic. I hope that as an industry, we can also unite and behind some of the stuff. Yeah. Is it going to be about transparency?
I would just like to point out that, you know, this industry is regulated more now than it's ever been. We've got more regulations out there and all these rules and all this stuff.
And lots of them are useless, Louie.
The like, majority
of them,
yes.
Well, if I may finish,
okay.
This, accidents and stuff continue to rise. So apparently the regulations and the rules that we're putting are not working.
Well,
it's that simple.
We all know that I think a majority of car truck accidents are not the truck driver's fault, but
try and get the
public to accept that.
It's hard to do that when you have a lawyer like one in Indiana who has 4,000 freaking billboards across the state.
I know who
every trucker, you know, for anything, you know, all these dying trucks plus lots of other people.
There's people that
Rolls Royce around.
There's lawyers that they think a fifth wheel is a guy who couldn't get a date for the prom, and that they're a trucking lawyer. And because that's, you know, that's where the money is, man. There's a lot of money in it.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. Go ahead.
And that's one of our other fights that's coming and going to be big is insurance minimums on carrier motor carriers.
Good luck. $750. Most people
know. It hasn't changed since the 80s.
People can't believe it.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it is unbelievable.
They can afford it, you know?
And no more schedule VINs. I freaking hate those policies. They're a big problem in our industry, I'd just like to say.
Oh, well.
That's another topic for another day.
We have the MCS 90, but okay. All right, we're off topic.
You guys are awesome. Like, I absolutely love this conversation. Oh, look, Catherine. Hi, Catherine. But thank you very much. I absolutely love this conversation, and we'll keep it going.
Nice meeting you guys. Nice
to meet you, Joe. Yeah,
nice
Same
to
here. Nice to see you again, Adam.
Hey, you too, Louie. All right,
nice
you guys
you,
have
Adam.
A good one.
You
so
too.
Long.